True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Listen, we have a really good show because there is actually a lot more information than I thought about that I definitely wanted to report on. Again, we're going to be discussing Nancy Guthrie, 84 years old, abducted from her home February 1st, the late morning hours of the 31st, if you will. But the first was when she did not report to watch church with her group that she normally watched from after COVID. And the investigation began, as far as we know. I think the sheriff likely had a misspeak when he spoke, one of his misspeaks where he says they reported to the scene actually the night before on Saturday in the night. Those are exact words, but I think he was just mistaken. It was really Sunday, that next day when the investigation began. This is what I want to get into right away, though. Couple of things. I'm going to first of all, though, talk about task force. I've had a lot of people ask me, what is this? You know, how does this work and everything? There are task forces that are in place at the FBI as we speak in every office. There's violent crime task forces. There are terrorism task forces, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, to be very specific. And what happens is it actually unites the entire law enforcement community together under one umbrella. And there's all these memorandums of understandings that have to be written to the various individuals, to their agency heads, to get them to be part of the task forces. Everybody has to be in agreement with it. And there's usually one lead. In this case, it's the FBI, which means basically they're housed there. And the overall task force is led typically by an FBI agent, but it depends on the case. Different case agents can be assigned that are part of these task force members. Task force members are specially deputized, if you will, as what we call them TFOs, task force officers. And everybody knows who the TFOs are in the office, and they're very highly regarded. Typically, they are sort of the cream of the crop from that particular law enforcement agency because, of course, they want to put their best foot forward with this task force. They're most experienced guys, in my opinion. Those were the task force officers I worked with. I'm pretty familiar with this because I started two task forces when I was in Texas. One was a gang task force and the other was a security task force after 9/11. And again, each of those, we incorporated so many individuals. For instance, that task force that worked after 9/11, we had IRS agents on that. We had Social Security, OIG special agents on that, all the locals in the area. That task force incorporated them because a lot of the issue with, in that case, we were worried about the security within the airport after having a lot of crimes after 9/11. Remember, American Airlines' hub was at Dallas, at DFW. So you can imagine the amount of concern at DFW. And we had so many cases. I've talked about several of them, the Fazel Kareem case, the Kevin Bob case, that caused us to have just really, I don't want to say in some instances, a lot of panic because people were in that area of the airport that they call the AOA, the airport operations area, that nobody should be in, but workers, air traffic controllers and that sort of thing. And they were in there. So there was a huge move to make sure that people that were working in the AOA did not have criminal backgrounds and were legally here. As you can imagine, the last thing we could afford to have was somebody undocumented that nobody knew their background from the various countries they were from. We had to make sure that that was cleaned up. So in any event, I just wanted to touch base on how these task forces work. Now, in this case, I truly believe that this was a violent crime task force that was already very well established. And the reason I say that is things happened pretty quick. In other words, those MOUs, those memorandums of understanding, all that takes a while. You have to have all the legal beagles go through everything. And their legal beagles go through everything and then everything signed off on it. Just takes a while. My belief is this was a violent crime task force that existed in Phoenix. And the focus of that task force was to focus on Nancy Guthrie's abduction, and in conjunction with that, add Pima County, if they weren't already there. I'm sure, I wouldn't doubt that at least one Pima County Sheriff's Officer was there, and I think they ended up sending 5 or 6 from the best of my memory, so reinforce that force there. So I just wanted to touch base on task forces, how they work, since I've had so many questions. The supervisor of that task force, again, is going to be an FBI agent. The paperwork that is done is all FBI. How the evidence is done and handled is all FBI done. It's really kind of cool because a lot of these officers who have never really been on the inside of the FBI and understood our rules and regulations and our paperwork and our systems, because they're in our systems 100%, they get a huge awakening. They're like, whoa, this is a lot. Because we have just so many safeguards to make sure not only that the evidence that we collect is done correctly and done legally, but also that it's going to withstand the test of time. And that is in a court of law, which is what is at the end of the day you're looking to actually. And thank you so much, members. Listen, I've got a new thing I'm going to do from now on. Whenever you guys do pose a question, I'm going to put it up here and I'm going to answer it. A lot of people have questions that other people are thinking anyway, and these memberships mean the world to me, and I really appreciate it coming on board and joining our true crime community here. So I really appreciate it, and thank you. In any event, these task forces come together, but everything is done the FBI way. And again, it can be pretty difficult for some people who've maybe had departments where they could kind of run things a little bit more loosey-goosey. There's no loosey-goosey in the Bureau. And for the most part, again, I'm upset about this mat not being taken and the fact that there were 2 searches after the FBI took over. You know, after the FBI's initial search, they went back to get the car, they went back to get the camera on the roof, and they went back to do the septic search. All of those just mind-boggling me, because ERT, the evidence response team, is usually so proficient at thoroughly examining a scene before it's released. But I want to get on to a couple of new items. First of all, I want to talk about this. We have known for a little while, that there was, this is why I have to put my glasses on, you guys. I am blind up close without them. Man, I can see forever away though. There it is. So we're hearing about this utility box that might have been tampered with. And we had heard some neighbors saying that it seemed that their internet service might have been down. I've heard everything from the entirety of the night, you know, night going into the early morning hours that Nancy was abducted, to more focused, more in that time window. So I don't feel like we really know, because there's couple of different reports out there and so on. But nevertheless, the FBI is looking into whether this was tampered with. And I've always said this makes so much more difference, some sort of outage in the area as opposed to this. And that is simply because what happens with a scanner. And I did a whole video, not me. I put up, I posted an entirety of a video so everybody could see. And I'm actually going to add an image from this anyway to show what these scanners do. These scanners obstruct, actually, let me find one here, obstruct what the image looks like. As you can imagine, it actually garbles the picture, if you will, like this. So you see when the scanner isn't close enough, in this case to the Wi-Fi, the individual in the background is clearer, and the stones and everything. But then as you get closer, as that scanner moves closer to the Wi-Fi router, it garbles the image. So that's what you're looking at. Can it completely go down? You know, I've seen some people say that. That's just not my experience when I've looked at these. It actually garbles or damages. It wouldn't take down your whole system, and it would only be while you were there. So it never made any sense to me that these scanners would be something that would be useful. In fact, if people want, I will actually post next time, if I can get it to go through, I'm going to post this video that was so well done by a local station, where they demonstrated from this actual footage, which was from burglars who use scanners, more proficient burglars that use scanners. So you could see how that they can mess with the signal. And again, it's not just a Wi-Fi signal. That would also affect your Bluetooth signal, because it's a particular, the signal is what they actually scramble. So this new reporting makes so much more sense to me, because this has to do with more people being affected and a longer period of time. And that's what I really understand the reporting to be, is that it's sort of a longer period of time that might have been affected. All right. I want to talk about this really interesting case. And I tweeted about it several days ago. Newsweek actually picked it up recently. And so I tweeted their article about it. And I just think that this has to just be considered. And that is, could this be something that was instigated by a network of individuals who wish to target high value victims? So we talk a lot about victimology, right? In other words, some people are talking about the fact that Nancy Guthrie was elderly, and could the fact that just alone that she was 84, could that have been the reason for this? I don't believe in this case that that is the reason. The reason I don't believe it is because there's a lot of risk in abducting or dealing with an 84-year-old. Are 84-year-olds victimized all the time? 100%. Look at old folks' homes. I actually post a lot about this on my Twitter, because to bring awareness to elderly abuse, how you just cannot trust your loved one in some of these facilities, how you need to have those nanny cams up in their room so you can make sure that they're being treated well, because elderly abuse is so prominent. Nurses that go into the home to care for these individuals, you wouldn't believe how horrible. I just posted one not long ago, maybe less than a month ago. And it's a very common occurrence. It's horrible how our elderly are abused and treated. But do I think Nancy, do I think she was targeted because she was 84? No, I really don't believe that. In terms of the persons, I want to touch on that too, that decided to do this. Do I think it's possible that that weighed into their decision-making in terms of how easy this would probably be? How easy to manipulate and to carry and to physically overcome an 84-year-old compared to a 35-year-old, 6'2" man? Yes, absolutely. That would be something that the people who committed this abduction and kidnapping, something that would definitely figure into their thoughts in terms of how they were going to handle this. And maybe one of the reasons why we see porch guy, and this isn't the exact picture of that, but when he first goes up, slinking up to the camera, keeping his head down, well knowing that camera was there. Could that be why, as everybody who's seen this video sees porch guy, you know, taking his own sweet time, not a care in the world, absolutely comfortable in the surrounding, no urgency, there's no break in, there's no smashing of windows and grabbing like you would normally see in a gang type or cartel type abduction. That isn't to say, and Detective Lumberg and I talked a lot about this yesterday, how it couldn't be a fringe member somebody who was in a cartel, somebody who was in a gang, somebody who fringes with them and had that in their background. Absolutely do I think that this could be a fringe, if you will. But do I think this was necessarily a cartel-ordered hit? Let me just talk about that in a different sort of way, not what we standard think of cartels. And I want to preface this too by saying cartels make their money in one third of the things they do. Well, maybe not one third, but a large part of what they do. I don't have the stats to say the exact number, but obviously the biggest business they're in is narcotic trafficking. The second biggest business they're in is human trafficking, coyoting, getting people across the border into the United States, and or otherwise human smuggling individuals across the border to be further sexually exploited and exploited as you know, mere actual slaves almost. I've worked those kinds of organized crime cases, and not just from Mexico, a lot of Asian, in the Asian industry. We saw this here in Florida. We saw it in Texas, all over the place where individuals are exploited. They're brought into the country and then they serve as slaves for years and years and years to quote unquote, pay off their passage to their individual who brought them here. So things like that, that go on from these cartel members, but they also within Mexico and South America, they love to abduct Americans that are there and get ransoms. And I'll tell you what, they take the ransom and they return the people. That's why they're very successful. Individuals, family members are told the FBI is hugely entrenched. The hostage negotiators do stints over there to help with these situations. Obviously, there's no FBI money. Actually, Chris Cuomo did a whole expose on a woman, an American, had her daughter on. I've spoken with her daughter numerous times, and she was abducted, I think, just when she was outdoors and taken. But unfortunately, I don't think the ransom was ever paid because the family couldn't afford it. She was never returned. It was this really sad case. And that happens often. If you can't pay, you're not getting your loved one back. But I tell you what, if you pay, you get your loved ones back. So that sort of business is very well established and a very big business, cartel members. But because of the situation with our border and the ability for them to come over now, or the inability, I should say, and the fact that, you know, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in Mexico to grab, there's no reason that they came over here and abducted Nancy Guthrie. That's my professional opinion on that. But could these be outliers? Absolutely. That would have been involved in her abduction, because I really am convinced, as Occam's razor would say, that this was a planned abduction, not a burglary gone bad, but a planned abduction, and things went horribly wrong afterwards. That's pretty much what I think at this point happened, from all the facts and evidence we have that we can see, and then combined with, of course, cutting this up with so many detectives and special agents that I know that are familiar with all these facts, we've pretty much come to the same likely conclusion, more likely than any of the other possibilities. So when we speak of this, when you consider that Pima County doesn't even have a category for kidnappings because they just don't happen in their jurisdiction, Tucson, Phoenix, again, and nationwide, it's well under 1% stranger kidnappings, kidnappers who go in to somebody's house that they don't know them. Now, again, I still believe there's inside information here that help these abductors, but nevertheless, they go into a situation and they take a person for ransom, and it's a true ransom situation. They are so very, very rare. So this is why I became absolutely intrigued by this case. And I'm really intrigued by this case. So meet Jackson Sullivan and Skylar LaPale. They are from San Obispo, California. They're teenagers, but they're being tried as adults. They decided it would be a good idea to travel over 6 hours and go to Scottsdale, Arizona. Now we're only about an hour and a half from Nancy's house, to a nice neighborhood. Let me show you the neighborhood. Nice neighborhood, not over the top mansions, but expensive neighborhood in Scottsdale, and abduct, kidnap, that's what they've been charged with, and held for ransom, beat up, roped, tied up, beat again, these individuals who were considered by these two schmucks to have money, to have wealth. What they wanted was 66 in crypto, I believe Bitcoin is what they said, 66 million. That's what they wanted. Now, why did they even go there? How did they even know about these victims? How did they know these people had money? How did these teenagers know all the way over in California about this house? Well, purportedly, they were contacted by Red, I'm not even kidding you, and 8, still not kidding you. The individuals that contacted them and communicated with them over the Signal app and told them about these targets, they also sent money, $1,000, to these two young men who have ruined their lives. They've sent that money to them so that they could buy what they needed to commit this crime. Ropes and anything else they needed. So now these guys have $1,000 and certainly promised millions, 66 million, if they could commit this kidnapping, hoping that the people they kidnapped would somehow make these boys able to access the money they had in the form of Bitcoin. That was the plan. That was the big scheme. Okay. And interesting, they drove this blue Subaru. This was picked up by a neighbor on his Ring camera, this clear picture of this car, which apparently was the vehicle used and that went through the neighborhood. So listen, these knuckleheads right here are no porch guy. They are no porch guy. They did dress up alike. They dressed as delivery men. You know, they actually at least put on a uniform and got themselves together in this way. They said that they hadn't met each other or known each other well previously, that they really came together to commit this kidnapping and ransom on these rich people in Arizona that lived an hour and a half north of Nancy Guthrie. There's just a few things. So first of all, let's just take the statistical likelihood that you would have kidnappings of people with money and means in these areas about an hour and a half or so from each other by entities. Now, this, believe me, the MO is not right. These people smashed and grabbed, went in, viciously assaulted. Of course, we don't know what happened to Nancy for the 40 plus minutes. And that's minimal that she was in that house. That people are taking that time from the time at 1:47 that the Nest camera was removed, and they're comparing that to when her pacemaker disconnected. I've always wondered, though, if somebody entered from the back, and I judged that from a couple of things. It seemed like he was waiting there. Like he even was like, I always wondered, is that what he was doing with that brush? It's like, well, maybe he can't see that dark hand. Let me pull some brush up and go like this so I can get the attention of my partner who's in there without making a lot of noise, without using my two-way radio. Hey, here I am. Let me in. And that maybe it was even a little bit further amount of time. Remember, there was a locksmith that went in there that did something to that back door. And I think that's very interesting. So anyway, again, this is just totally a hypothesis that there was somebody else who went in the back and let Porch Guy in. Porch Guy's job was to take down that camera because they did not want to take Nancy Guthrie all the way around their house. She lives on about an acre, big cabana house, big pool area. It's a spread out one story all around that house where other cameras could possibly see. It would make so much more sense to go under the cover of darkness, this small length of sidewalk, bring that up, and go to the car in this circle drive that's well close to the house right there. And we've seen the blood spatter and the blood droplets, I should say, the blood droplets that made a little bit of spatter when they dropped, I believe. But then as they walk out, can immediately get into a car. And again, we've seen the pictures. This is black. This neighborhood is black, pitch black, without some luminescence. So anyway, I just hope, and I know they are. There's no part of me that thinks I'm the only one that has thought about this within FBI task force that's looking at this. They need to just look at this, because it's so interesting to me that these individuals, and it's been talked about that they were sort of extorted, that they were made to do this. Well, I don't know what Red and 8 had over them. I don't even know if they're going to be able to identify Red and 8. I don't know how they were contacted. Was it through the dark web? You know, obviously these guys have some serious baggage. Whether they've been arrested for their baggage or not is a whole different question, right? There's so many people that do a lot of bad things, but have they ever been arrested? Have they ever been caught for it? So I think it's just interesting, because you have, this is what is the same or similar, is the victimology, is who they decided to victimize, right? They decided to victimize somebody that at least purportedly had a lot of money. They went into a very nice neighborhood. They used a uniform as a ruse to get in. Porch guy didn't use a uniform to get in, but he certainly used a uniform to completely cover himself. They were also very violent, you know, tied up the rich people that they were trying to get to transfer $66 million in Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, but specifically it was named in the articles I've read, Bitcoin, to their accounts. What I'm going to really be looking for here is, can they identify Red and 8, and can law enforcement figure that out? Remember, law enforcement still has not been able to figure out who sent the ransom notes. Who sent the ransom notes to the media stations, to the two local media stations, and to the media station that was TMZ? That's how we came to know about all those ransom notes. They still haven't been able to figure that out, even though it came into these, you know, what, tip line or, you know, public lines, so that people can actually send information to these stations. It's shocking to me. It really is, that you can email somebody. I understand about VPNs. I understand that there are layers. But, you know, I know that they've got to be, the Bureau has got to be employing experts in this area to try to trace back the ransom notes to the person that has that email. And that they're working hard on that with, between the cyber experts within the Bureau and then all the different outside entities that might be able to help with that. So I think it's really interesting to me is, are they going to be able to identify Red and 8? That's the information that we have, everything through Signal, Red and 8. And that was who orchestrated these criminal masterminds, I'm being facetious, to commit this crime. So could it have any connection to how these perpetrators got their lead? I want to be clear. I don't think these guys had anything to do with it. Of course not. I think they were arrested anyway by then. I'm just saying, could it be possible that Porch Guy was given the information about Nancy through individuals who were trying to set up kidnappings of high dollar net worth victims? So, in other words, something more organized, something more cartelish, that would be more organized in terms of who they're going to victimize, when it's going to happen. Or could it be more the Occam's razor, which is somebody that was in that house, a housekeeper, the daughter of a housekeeper, the the pool guy, the person who did the electrical upgrade at the house, could, through information they had, that somehow got to a relative, a friend, somebody related to Porch Guy in some way. And I don't mean related like blood related, but related in terms of an intersection that led Porch Guy and I think somebody else, others, to victimize and abduct Nancy Guthrie in hopes of a large payoff through a ransom that was never allowed to happen because there never ended up being any proof of life. I just cannot shake the fact that this is an hour and a half from one another and there are no kidnappings in this way. There are so few that ever occur in the United States. And for me to see now within the same general time frame, this sort of activity, the Bureau just needs to look into it. Could be absolutely nothing, could be nothing. But if they have nothing right now, we don't know what they have. Believe me, they have a lot, 99% more than we know. They have so much. But if what they have is not leading them down a road to determining who did this to Nancy Guthrie, if they don't already, in other words, if they're not already heading in a direction like with the Idaho 4 case, where behind the scenes, after about a month or so, they were definitely heading down a direction due to the DNA on the knife sheath. If law enforcement right now is not heading down a clear direction, then they need to look in this direction. I'm sure they are, because it's interesting. It's unusual that you would have a similar type victim chosen, meaning high dollar in a similar area chosen. How would they know that? Anyway, I want to know who Red or Eight and Eight are. I'm going to be watching this case because if Red and Eight are not captured, what is to stop Red and Eight from getting other individuals, maybe really dumb ones like these two idiots, by the way, violent idiots willing to willing to tie up their victims and beat them defenseless, beat them more. They said they beat them initially, and then when they continued to deny that they could get them the money, which of course, again, you know, just put your hands on $66 million. I don't care how rich you are. You might have several thousand in your safe, even 10, 20, 30,000 in your safe, your mattress money. But your other money is going to be tied up. Even if you're worth millions, it's tied up in stocks, in investments, in real estate, in financial institutions, you know, that are FDIC insured for up to $250,000. You don't have that money just where you can press a button and necessarily send it through a Bitcoin that once it's sent, it's gone, because on the other end, they take it and there's no getting it back. So anyway, I just had to talk about that today because I think it needs to be explored. And as I said, even if it has nothing to do, in other words, if Red and Eight didn't get lucky and give this information to really astute people like Porch Guy and his possible partners, people that know to cover up, people that know to not take their cell phones, to not have a cellular connect with the house, or I've been talking about choke points. Even if you have somebody that turns off their phone but brings it because they need later communication, even if you have that, you need to check the choke points. And I'm sure the FBI is doing that. They know that. They know that there's certain ways to get in and out of Nancy's neighborhood, and they need to be checking the cellular activity in those particular areas by using the cell tower or the the pings. So not just Nancy's house, but the pings throughout her neighborhood, and not only her neighborhood, but further out the choke points that lead to that neighborhood, to see if they can narrow it down and do the geofence from those areas. Again, I know a lot of people agree with me and a lot of people don't agree with me that likely they were using handheld radios. I mean, I just look at this. If I'm going to do a crime like this, I'm using handhelds. My cell phone is nowhere near this zip code. I'm using handhelds. I'm doing a lot of what Porch Guy is doing. Would I ever carry my gun where my fly would be on my pants? No. Would I have a holster that would fit my gun? Yes. Do these guys look like Cali or Medellin or Jalisco or New Generation or any of those cartels would handle this? Absolutely not in terms of the gun carrying. If they had any sort of holster, it would be an apparatus that would be on up on their person, or a low slung, what I call a low slung. But this perpetrator right here that we see, Porch Guy, and I know this is not the best picture. This is maybe the recon picture. I'm still not convinced about all that. But he did a lot right. I want to talk about really quick. The last thing I want to talk about today is he used a light in his mouth. And I don't have that picture up here right at this second. I know everybody has seen that. Let me actually see if I can pull that picture up, because I want to make a huge point here. Do you see where Bridge Guy is? Or I'm sorry, Bridge Guy is from Delphi. Porch Guy is standing, everyone. He is literally standing on this mat. What does that mean? Whatever could have been on his shoes from where he really lives and he resides, particular clays, muds, dust, pebbles, dog dung. Who knows what was on the bottom of his shoes that stood right on this mat that wasn't taken by law enforcement? We know that because we have photos from the media that went up in here, and that mat is right there. How about the fact, and I don't have to put this, I don't have to take the time to take this picture, but that light that was in his mouth. You put something in your mouth for any amount of time, you're going to start salivating and drooling because it's difficult to swallow. And then he takes it out. Everybody, that would have put saliva, his DNA, all over this mat. I'm going to ask John DePietro to look to see if that mat is still there. I don't know if they can get close enough to see it. Obviously, drone coverage is all stopped, but this was certainly there when News Nation was on scene. Absolutely. Inton and Nancy Liu, and we had another reporter out there. All of them. Listen, this mat was there. News Nation camera crews took this well after the crime scene was abandoned. Saliva, shoe. Is absolutely the worst faux pas, in my opinion, in the case, that mat wasn't taken. It really is. Hopefully they've taken it since and maybe gotten a profile off of that. I mean, certainly it doesn't mean that they didn't analyze it. You know, they could have done you take basically a swab, a specialized swab, and other water type chemicals to bring up the DNA. They could have done that. Why not take the mat? I'll never understand that. The other thing, and Detective Lumberg talked about this, that when he pulled those weeds, and maybe now we know, maybe he did, well, we don't know, but I'm just surmising. This is the first time, hypothetically, I've been able to make sense of this. Maybe he took that because he thought they weren't seeing the black hand, because it would be black. And maybe he's like, all right, I'll just pull this. Hey, guys, I'm here. Let me in. The door's locked. That's about the only thing I can make sense of that. I'm going to text Mac right after this and chat with her about that, because that does make some sense to me. But they should have taken it. Anyway, all right, I've harped enough on that. Sorry. Let's see here. I think that's it. Every time I go to do a show on Nancy Guthrie, I find so much to talk about. If you know, if you dig from an investigative standpoint, I'm like, there's always something to talk about. But you know what? You guys are digging too. And I really so appreciate your guys' thoughts and what you have to say. As I always say, I'm never going to make it on a jury. It's all of you that will make it on a jury. So you have great insight and thoughts. And I just want to look, I want to take at least three questions at either the beginning or end of each show. So I didn't see any pop up on screen. So let me see if anybody has any particular questions. If you do, show them up here and I'll post them up on my screen here. Let's see. Is this a question? Let's see. Yeah, I'm going to show this one just to make sure. The flowers should have been taken. Detective Lemberg pointed out, and actually Mac did too, that when you pulled that, even though you have gloves on, there's a possibility a micro tear could have happened, and that DNA could be on with all the force that would have been used. And you saw him. He didn't just get it easily. He was struggling down there to get it. That DNA could have been found on those. And I don't know if they were taken, but it doesn't seem for sure that they were all taken. I would have taken it all. Let's see. Okay, here's another good one. Number two, do you think this has to do with the Epstein files? Okay, this is interesting. And if you look at the very first tweet about this case, and I'll never forget, because News Nation contacted me, Chris Cuomo's show, the producer, and said, hey, listen, we might have you on tonight. This will probably be an elderly person that walked out of the house, you know, that is just missing, but we're tracking it. We may have you on. And so I immediately started looking everything up and seeing that, oh my gosh, this was a homicide. They called homicide in early. And remember, Detective Lumberg pointed out something I think is really important to us, or for me, that I didn't know. He said, when you have a smaller department like this, you're always going to have any sort of case that seems not usual. In other words, they didn't think she wandered off. You're going to bring in your homicide detectives because you have to work your way up to that. He was a homicide detective for 10 years, but part of that, I think he was 5, 6, 7 years a robbery detective. And before that, maybe burglary or something like that. He was from a huge department, though. Dallas is huge. And then, of course, before that, he was patrol, you know, a career law enforcement Dallas guy. But you have to work your way up. So his point is, you know, you can't necessarily make too much out of it that homicide was called in, because they're calling in their best, most seasoned detectives. So, but right when I read that, I thought, oh, my gosh. And so I did a tweet on that very first day. On the first, I believe, that talks about the Nancy Guthrie case and talks about it in a lot of detail. And on that, as a PS, I wrote, PS, isn't it interesting? This is coming up during the Epstein files. And isn't it interesting that Savannah Guthrie interviewed all those Epstein victims? And, you know, really had a heart for the Epstein story. And, of course, just the timing of it all, that's right when Epstein broke. So everyone, including me, everybody, every account that follows true crime, mainstream media, the focus was the Epstein and release of all that. And then that just went like this. when Nancy ended up being abducted. So do I think that they correlate? Wow, if that ends up being the situation, that would be jaw-dropping. In other words, that this would have been done for the purpose. I don't think so, though. I really don't. I think it was just that timing ended up having those same results. The result of Nancy being abducted and the result of the Epstein case being put in the way back when it comes to mainstream media. Boy, that'll be something if literally the person who did this, if they're arrested and they said, well, it was specifically to get the eyes off of Epstein. I don't think we're going to see that, but I've always found it interesting that the timing ended up being this way. Okay, let me see if we have another question. This is the last question. Let's see. Here we go. All right. Do you think the perpetrator could have put a screen mask on, like a lookalike to look? You know, that is interesting, and that has been floating around, Tiffany. So I'm glad you asked that question. In other words, the question is, you know, those masks that can look like somebody else, and then they put a mask on top of that. So in other words, could they have been brilliant enough to put on a mask that would cover their entirety of their face and appear to have those crazy eyebrows, to have that mustache, and then over top of it, put the, you know, what we see, the mask that we see, the ski type mask? It's very interesting. I don't think so, just because when I look at that, it looks like hair, and it looks like that mustache. And so, and I don't know any masks like that that would be, you know, made in that way that you could commercially buy, certainly, unless this is a Tootsie situation, but I don't think it's that. So I think it's an interesting question. Certainly, we don't know 100%, but again, Occam's razor. I think the guy who did this believed that the mask he had concealed his identity enough that he wouldn't need that extra layer. So no, I don't believe, and in any cases I've ever worked, I never saw this double mask effect. So going with Occam's razor, the simplest solution, I think likely no, but everything is a possibility. The question is, when you're doing investigations, is it a probability? So I don't think it's necessarily a probability. Everyone, thank you so much for being here again. We'll keep the morning show going, planning on 8 tomorrow. Chocolate chip pancakes, get dressed, get the show together. And of course, the night before, I plan, after looking at the day's worth of activities. I want to thank my mods. I want to thank each of you who became a member today. I really appreciate that. And to each of you who spend your morning hour with us, thanks so much. Till next time, may justice be served.